Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Welcome to the 1 year anniversary of this podcast. I'm your host, Chad McAllister. I have some exciting news to share, thanks largely to this podcast. I was named a Product Management Top 40 Influencer for 2015 on the Product Management Year in Review site. I'm honored and really humbled to be on this list. Some of the other influencers I've had the pleasure of interviewing on this podcast, and there's others that I follow, such as Eric Reese, Steve Blank, and Guy Kawasaki. Instead of the normal interview format, this is a special episode, and I'm covering two topics. I'm excited to review the key concepts I found most useful for product managers and innovators from the last 52 episodes. I heard Tim Ferriss do something similar on his podcast and thought it was really helpful and hope that you find it valuable for this podcast. Also, I want to share a product roadmap I've been working on. It's a product roadmap that tells you how to go from a product manager to a product master. To get the show notes for this episode, go to theeverydayinnovator.com/053. Okay, before jumping in, I want to wish everyone a wonderful 2016. In the last couple weeks, like many of you, I enjoyed a great Christmas holiday and a celebration of the new year. I hope you did too. I love this time of year. As a Christian, Christmas has a special meaning of how God showed his love to us, and it's a holiday I look forward to all year. New Year's is often a time when I plan and design new projects that I want to accomplish in the next several months. A lot of people do this too. They use New Year as that time to make plans. It's also the time of the year that people talk about goal setting and processes for achieving goals. It seems like I can't pick up anything or listen to a podcast not talking about that. Many of those goal setting approaches are good, but they can be overly complicated. I use a simple strategy tool that takes me about 20 minutes to get through, and it's the basis of all the other planning that I do. It's also a tool that you can apply to your product work. So let me just walk through it real quick with you. Start with Evernote or a piece of paper or whiteboard, however you like to capture information, and write the first section heading, 3 years. And then you're going to write a short description, but should be a crystal clear description of what you want your life to look like in 3 years. If this was a project, the context would be a little bit different, but you're envisioning a future state, life in 3 years. And then the next section heading is going to be 1 year. And you need to think about what are the activities that need to be accomplished in the next year that will make your 3-year goal possible. And it's typically not 1/3 of your 3-year goal, right? Most things we do have a scaling up factor, so you don't have to accomplish 1/3. But you do have to make real progress, right, towards that 3-year goal. And so you write what that 1 year needs to look like and what are those things that you need to get done. Then the next section heading, you write 90 days. And for this, it's going to be those activities that need to be accomplished in the next quarter of the year to make that 1 year possible. So we're starting to make things really concrete. Then the final section heading is 1 week. And you're going to write down the steps that you need to take this week that is the first real step towards making that 90-day plan a reality. And then you update this next week. And you write down the 1 week activities, the most important things that need to get done. They keep moving you towards that 90-day goal that then moves you towards that 1 year. And if that works well, it moves you towards that 3 year. I did this exercise recently focused on the impact I want to make with product managers. As a discipline, product management does have some room for development. As I've trained thousands of people in the practices of product and innovation management in the last several years, I've discovered how product managers can develop their careers and expertise so they have truly meaningful impact in their organizations. I call this the Product Mastery Roadmap, and it shows how you as a product manager become a product master, dramatically increasing the number of right products created, those that customers want and love, while also increasing your influence in the organization. The roadmap goes through 4 levels towards mastery. Competent, proficient, expert, and master. The first level, gaining competence, frankly, is where most product managers really need to start. That's been my experience with the vast majority. At this level, you learn the details of ideation, product development, and evolving products once they are launched. If you want to see how to go from product manager to product master, Get the roadmap at no cost at theeverydayinnovator.com. There'll be a big button you can't miss that takes you to the details. This podcast has come a long way from its humble beginnings. When I was traveling the U.S. for a year in a motorhome, talking with product managers and innovators, I liked having that first-person kind of interaction with them. I still need to write a book about those experiences. But I was back home for all of 2015 and did 52 weekly episodes of this podcast. I just want to let you know, if you do listen to this podcast someplace besides iTunes or directly from the Everyday Innovator website, such as all of my wonderful listeners on Blog Talk Radio, you don't have access to all 52 episodes. To find any that you've missed, head over to theeverydayinnovator.com. This will be fixed for this year, so wherever you listen to it, you'll get access to all episodes now. There are a lot of key concepts shared in these episodes, and I want to highlight some of them. All of the episodes contain valuable insights, but to keep this episode a reasonable length, I'll review the concepts that I found most important. I'm also discussing the concepts mostly in a linear manner in the order the interviews were conducted, with just a little jumping around, you'll see. This is going to be pretty rapid fire. For the links to the episodes discussed during this podcast, you can go to the show notes for this podcast, and it will give you the links to all the other things I talk about. Again, that's theeverydayinnovator.com/053. Okay, let's dive in. Episode 002, the product manager's two most powerful questions. Ask what else and why for understanding users. Darshan Rain, an industrial designer, shared how can we do a better job understanding what users need and what they value. And we do that by observing them directly, by asking the correct questions. And he shared that those were the ones that avoid assumptions, not leading the user down a path. And reminding us that asking simple questions like what else and why can get to some core root issues. And also, like, he likes to walk in their shoes, experience what they're experiencing. Brian Gardner, the copy blogger product officer, shared in episode 3 innovation lessons that he's learned creating Studio Press, which are testing feasibility, identifying trends, and other things he discussed. The key point I want to bring out was that we should be testing product concepts and the business model with customers before actually beginning development. As an example, Brian asked people if they would buy a WordPress theme before he actually started building it. In episode 5, how relying on aggregate marketing data can doom new product development. This was George Farkas, CEO of an energy company. And he said to watch out for those who say, we know what the customer needs. The only way to really know what the customer needs is to iterate and co-develop prototypes with customers, test those hypotheses, and get direct feedback. Andrew Warner, who's the founder of Mixergy, another podcast that interviews entrepreneurs, in episode 7, he shared simple steps for using the minimum viable product approach to create a product customers really love. And he shared this approach that he used for creating a training product. And the MVP was built entirely around a set of landing pages and used those to first gain customers. And then if there was enough interest from those customers, develop the actual product. Again, this notion of making sure we have the customers before diving into development. In episode 8, Brian Ottman, PhD, shared some customer research approaches, both qualitative and quantitative. And he talked about being sure that you really know the characteristics of a product that provide the customers the value, that we've identified the specific things that really do provide them value, and how customers make those trade-off decisions. For example, diapers that don't leak are much more important than diapers that actually look like underwear, a project that he was on. And he said his best qualitative research tool he recommends is ethnography. I agree with that. I think that stands out on my list of most effective tools for really getting deep insights. And that just means we're directly observing customers. And the best quantitative research tool he likes is conjoint analysis. In episode 9, we had a nonprofit perspective on innovation. This was from product manager Jeff Peters at Compassion, who used an idea management system to create a life-saving product, a water purification system. And that ideation process they went through, that idea management system, it started with a 2-day innovation retreat. So this was an organization that had really no experience over the last, I think at least 3 decades, developing a new product. So to jumpstart this, I started with an innovation treat of 2 days. And at that retreat, there were 1,200 ideas generated by the employees participating. Then a team went through and reviewed all those and synthesized them, resulting in 35 real concrete product concepts. They tested those concepts externally with a new market, one that they were trying to go after, not their existing donors for this nonprofit organization, on the basis of two dimensions, the importance of the concept and those donors' willingness to provide financial support to donate to it. Then they took the top 10 concepts based off of that external testing, and they tested them internally with an executive team for the feasibility of being able to actually accomplish getting that product created. They selected the top three of those and then ran them through a new product development cycle. Graphics and descriptions for each product were created and tested with focus groups. And Jeff Peters ran with one of them, which was that water system purification, which has made such a difference to so many people. So I just love that story for so many reasons. It's a good example of an organization that had no experience with new product development that dove into an ideation approach that really worked well for them. In episode 11, Ash Mariah shared his work that he also talked about in his book, Running Lean, How to Iterate from Plan A to a Plan That Works. I think this was one of the most important Lean books from 2015, and it really takes the work in Lean Startup to the next step of showing how to apply these very important practices. So Lean is an approach that Ash defines as one that maximizes quickly learning about the riskiest aspects in product concepts. The core issue in product management is not can we build the product, but will customers care if the product is built, what I often think of as building the right product. The Lean approach involves running those small, fast experiments to test what customers want and what creates value for them. And we had a few interviews that really dealt with the aspects of getting hired as a product manager or changing your job or improving the job you have now as a product manager. In episode 13, talked with a professional recruiter, Paul Fried, getting the product manager or developer job you want. Episode 20 was with Gail McDowell. She wrote a book on interviewing for a product management job. And then also in episode 14, talked to a product manager kind of through the day in the life of a product manager, Lee Martucci. But he specifically also talked about how he changed industries and how he got into product management in the first place, coming from a marketing and sales background, and then moved from telecom to a very different industry, which was building products, construction products, and how he made that transition. All three of those episodes, 13, 20, and 14, I'm not sure why I have those out of order, but that's how I have them, 13, 20, and 14, address this aspect of getting a job in product management or progressing in your career as a product manager. So if you're interested in that, really helpful to look at. Episode 15 was a wonderful interview. So much enjoyed this with a Innovation Award winner of 2015. It was called the Global Leader of Innovation Award, Rowan Gibson, and was diving into one of the books that he wrote at the time of his most recent book, The Four Lenses of Innovation. And he talked through what the four lenses were. The first lens was challenging orthodoxies, which is questioning those entrenched beliefs and assumptions, and then exploring new and unconventional answers. The second lens is harnessing trends, recognizing the future potential of emerging developments, and leveraging those trends to open new opportunities. The third lens was leveraging resources, which involves understanding our limitless capacity for redeploying skills and assets in new ways, combinations, or contexts, really thinking about how we can make better use of the resources and in very different ways. The fourth lens is understanding needs, paying attention to issues and frustrations others have ignored, and experimenting with new solutions to problems. And we see that sometimes show up in products that we go, you know, duh, why didn't someone think about this sooner? And one that he shared that I thought was brilliant that fits that category is the Dutch Boy. Sherwin-Williams is the company, but they make the Dutch Boy product line. And they made a new can of paint. Instead of that really clumsy metal can with the metal lid, they made a plastic can with a screw-off lid that actually has a pouring capability that the paint doesn't all run down on the side, and a place for holding the handle, make it easy to carry. And just go, duh, why wasn't this thought of sooner? So really good, nice review of how to apply these four lenses to think about innovation in a new way and thinking about innovation opportunities. In episode 19, a great conversation with startup founder Ethan Appleby on the five steps of design thinking. And one reason why I love this interview so much is because of his story of how he started VanGo. He was involved in a hackathon, and the person he was supposed to be teamed with for this weekend hackathon decided to go a different route. And he was actually walking back to his car in the parking lot and just ran into a stranger, another person that was walking into the hackathon. They started talking about different problems they have. They came across the shared interest in art and that it's really hard to find original art for your apartment. Right. And something that millennials are concerned about is having original art and wanting to make that process and experience easy. And that's how VanGo got started. They decided to team up, go back into the hackathon. They spent the next day conducting 100 interviews, design thinking style, in a mall, really understanding the problem people had with identifying original art and the process of how they go about buying it and what they like and don't like and how that could all be improved. And then they spent the next day prototyping up a solution for that, and they indeed won the hackathon and had the seed money for what became VanGo, which is a startup now in Silicon Valley that's gone through at least their first round of funding and is off to a very good start. And those five steps of design thinking, we start out with empathy, really learning about the audience you're designing for. Definition, constructing a point of view organized by the needs and insights that you learn from doing the empathy work. Step three is the ideation, which is that brainstorming work to generate ideas that could be possible solutions. Step four is prototyping those possible solutions and then iterating those with the user. That takes us to step five, which is that testing, the showing of the prototypes and getting feedback. And design thinking is a really good approach for going through and understanding what your customers really need, what their problem actually is. And it helps you drive you to a solution quickly. It has kind of a similar perspective as lean startup thinking, but they start in different places. But they're both getting to this issue of understanding what the customer's problem is, iterating solutions, and getting to what you believe is the right solution before you actually are building it and developing it. In episode 22, this was how 3M triggers innovation through organizational development, and talked to two practitioners that have been involved with 3M, Kimberly Johnson and A.B. Reynolds. And they did research at 3M interviewing these real powerhouses of innovation, well-known names in the innovation world. And they found three themes that foster organizational innovation. Conditions must exist to allow individuals and teams to create innovative products. The leaders must spot, support, and invest in valuable innovations. And the third one is that as the product matures, the leaders must optimize the innovation and eventually look about how to harvest that as a business or choose to renew the organization with a new set of products. In episode 25, this was one of my personal favorites only because I got to be so involved with it. It was called Enabling Future Innovation Leaders. And there was a previous episode, 23, that I interviewed the CEO of Eyeline Golf. They're a company that makes golf training products. And I met him at a time that I was doing this Future Innovation Leader class. And this was with kids on the ages of, if memory serves right, like 8 to 12 years old. We had 8 kids in the class. And at the time, he needed a prototype made of a little training aid that was going to just couple two pieces of plastic and let the two pieces of plastic slide back and forth with each other. But he wasn't quite sure how to get this done and how to actually manufacture after the fact. And I said, hey, I'm doing this little class with these kids. They're working on 3D design projects, among other things. You know, why don't we turn them loose and see what they can come up with? And they worked in small teams, had 3 teams of kids working on prototypes. And Sam went through them, picked a prototype. It actually turned out to be my daughter that refined this prototype. Probably another reason why I really like this episode. And she ended up making the version that is now out in real use. And it first went out to the PGA players to be tested as a new training aid. And now it's out on the market, and a great story of innovation. And this was built around what you can do with 3D printers, right? So this kind of on-demand mini manufacturing capability, and being able to do prototypes and create new products like that was just great fun for the kids and fun for me to be a part of. In episode 27, I interview Charlie Noble. He's the chairman of the Product Development and Management Association. And if you're a product manager, you want to know about PDMA. It's because of PDMA that I have really learned so much about what product development and management really is. Before that, I was very much involved in project management and still looking for knowledge about these pieces I was missing out on, but problems I was running into on the job, and I knew I needed more knowledge. And PDMA was a really good place for me to go to first get my eyes kind of opened about the discipline of product management. Since my introduction to PDMA, I've also gotten involved with AIPMM, which is another professional association for product managers. And I had the pleasure of interviewing their president, Therese Padilla. And AIPMM has also made wonderful contributions to this discipline of product management and also marketing management and agile product management and innovation in general. And they are the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, and had a wonderful conversation with their president to learn more about the organization and the work that they've been doing. In episode 28, this was creating an innovation group in a large organization. And I had a few interviews like this during the year about creating new innovation groups, either with chief innovation officers or VP of innovation. In this case, it was the VP of innovation at Relix Group. He created a really small innovation team. So this is a company, a group on the size of, let's say, around 30,000 people. And they have an innovation team that really is Jeff and a couple people, and then they bring in other resources. And their primary responsibilities are to build innovation capability across the business by helping groups set up their own innovation processes, providing the training and giving them tools to use, and then also providing resources as needed, helping to coordinate those resources for strategic projects with specific expertise and to help, you know, add capacity to those products that are in the works. And I thought it was really interesting how they are doing so much really with so little. And they're emphasizing existing champions of innovation already across the organization. And they're just kind of being the catalyst and the connector. And can contrast that with other organizations I talked to throughout the year that are doing things on a different scale. And I thought that was really interesting inside such a large company, how the VP of Innovation, Jeff, is getting a lot of connecting done with a very small group. In episode 29, I got to talk to a serial innovator. And this is a term I came across a few years ago by a book of the same title that was co-authored by Abby Griffin, who I've had followed for a long time. She's made a lot of good contributions to the world of product management. Episode 29 was reflections on being a serial innovator in a large organization. And the organization is Caterpillar. And Steve, the innovator I talked to, he talked about some of his learnings, which frankly has been a lot about hitting his head against that proverbial wall inside an organization until he could finally just break it down, right? Because large organizations are often inherently resistant to innovation, because innovation means doing new things, right? And it's hard to embrace those new things. So one of his pieces of advice was, you know, innovators have to realize you fail. But you just don't want to fail spectacularly. It's back to that notion of run quick, small experiments, learn from them, and move on, right? So make them small failures, learn from that, and move on to the bigger, better things. And he talked about the paradox of innovation, that we ask these incumbents to innovate, yet their basis of knowledge is really only supporting incremental innovation. It's not doing anything radical. That's what happens is too often as companies get large, they rely on what has made them successful, and they're just not good anymore at radical innovation. And they need innovators, like in Steve's case, a serial innovator, to make a difference. In episode 33, I talked with Tim Bates, who is a product manager and executive for hire for organizations, and has helped several organizations at the C-suite. He talked about both the perspective of how startups are being acquired by other organizations and how startups can contribute to innovation inside organizations. And I thought that was a important conversation to understand from a startup perspective, how they can be thinking about them being part of a large organization, maybe as an exit strategy for them being purchased and then going through that transition, and how large companies are acquiring smaller startups to help kind of kickstart their innovation efforts too, and what's going on there with internal incubators and innovation labs. Episode 39 was what product managers need to know about IP protection with Dan Breen. And Dan is a IP attorney and did a really clear job of talking through what a utility patent is, design patent, trade secrets, trademarks, and copyright protection for artistic works, and gave a really great introduction to that IP world and helped all of us as product managers understand what the options there were and when things applied and when they did apply, as well as the time frames involved and when you need to start thinking about these things based on your time frame. I had the great pleasure of talking with designer Mark Zay in episode 41 about using story and prototyping in a design thinking framework. And he was at IDEO for a number of years. When he came to IDEO, he was already applying what he later learned was design thinking, right? And that term has kind of grown up since then. But we credit IDEO with the original design thinking process that is now taught at the Stanford D School. And he went through the components of a framework that he uses, really based on design thinking, but from his background, right, which is identifying customer needs, the cycle of build, test, iterate, and refine, validate and communicate what you found to the organization, and finally a product development process for making those concepts real. And the activities need to be performed in that order, that we are indeed identifying the customer needs first, then going through that build, test, iterate, and refine cycle, and making sure we're addressing the right needs in the right way. In episode 45, that was a great interview with Tony Alwick on understanding what customers need before developing a product. You might see a recurring theme here. We addressed that kind of topic several times about let's make sure we really know what the customer wants so we build the right product before we actually start development. And about Tony's work, Clayton Christensen said his approaches bring discipline and predictability to the often random process of innovation. And the category of innovation that Tony created is called ODI, outcome-driven innovation. ODI was published in the Harvard Business Review, and when it was, they declared it one of the ideas that will profoundly affect business as we forge ahead in today's complex times. Tony also authored the book, What Customers Want, and that, among other things, explains the jobs to be done framework and how that's used with outcome-driven innovation. In episode 46, this was one of these interviews with a large corporation and director of innovation. And this was building a global innovation capability at Caterpillar with their director of innovation, Ken Gray, which became the director of innovation. This was a new group as of about June 2015, and had the pleasure of talking with him just a couple of months after that occurred to find out why it came about and the differences that it makes. And his role is really structured around increasing innovation at Caterpillar. And he's done that by thinking about his work into three distinct categories. The core, doing what Caterpillar already does, but doing it better. The adjacent, which is finding opportunities that are logical extensions of what they do today, but they can create new business units. And then the transformation, which are those entirely new places that Caterpillar could go that we probably would associate with Caterpillar. This is very similar to the purpose of Google X for Google, right? Those moonshot kind of projects that are outside of what the business is doing today. That kind of organization has been thought in other terms, like the three horizons kind of perspective. But Ken laid that out in just a lot of clarity that I thought was very practical. And it was interesting to hear how, again, inside a large organization, this innovation group is making efforts to connect people across the organization to really foster innovation through innovation champions in each of the groups, and provided nice insight into how they've benchmarked other organizations and what they're doing to really drive innovation forward in a large old company at this point, and how they want to change the business. Another interview with a chief innovation officer was in episode 48, and this was investigating IBM. And this was Linda Bernardi, and her unofficial title is the Chief Disruption Officer. And I enjoyed how she talked about the need to change the organization for real advancement and innovation. And what we're really doing through innovation is we are disrupting aspects of the organization, and that we need to think about innovation in those terms and deal with that, what those ramifications are to the organization and the culture of the organization. Episode 51 was creating strategic narratives and imagineering your innovation process. And that's imagineering, as in a Disney Imagineer, who was Joe Tankersley, that I had the pleasure of interviewing. And he talked about the importance of narrative, the story, as being the most effective way to explore possible futures. And that we can use scenarios to consider the range of possible futures, that worst case and the best case, and what is probably most likely to occur under some specific circumstances. And it is through story that we can envision what a future state will be like, what the customer's needs might be at that point, and then back up and think about what actions do we need to take today to prepare for a future state that might be, you know, 3, 4, 5, 15 years down the road, and get ready for that new future and how story plays a role of that. In episode 52, the last one of 2015, talked about a simple approach for all product managers and innovators to be more effective communicators. And this was a great personal experience I had. I was at a conference called the SCORE Conference, and my small group coach for that experience was Curtis Fletcher. I had the opportunity to interview him. He happens to be a product manager. He was a product manager at Oracle. He's been in executive roles, and really was a perfect person to talk to about communicating more effectively in the world of product management. And in episode 52, we talked about all speeches or all presentations can only accomplish one of two things. That means there's only one of two types of presentations. You can either be training your audience, or you can be trying to persuade your audience. And that's it. Just recognizing that realization, and that did take a while to sink in, but that provides a lot of clarity, because a lot of presentations get watered down because they actually try to do both at the same time, or some other things that just misfire. And if you focus on one, you're either training your audience or persuading your audience, you come out with a much clearer presentation with real steps that people can walk away with that they're likely to remember. As you might have picked up, the SCORE Conference teaches you the SCORE system for how to be a more effective communicator. And that's an acronym. S is for subject, the subject of the presentation, like customer research. C is the central theme. That's the specific aspect of the subject that you're going to address, like what you need to know to effectively conduct customer research using, say, ethnography. O is the objective. And this is a structured sentence that's a proposition to your audience. And this is really what hangs, for me, what hangs together an effective presentation. If you get a clear objective put together that makes sense, this will structure your presentation so that your audience will walk away knowing what you actually talked about and what you wanted them to know. So for example, every product manager can effectively conduct customer research using ethnography by following five simple steps. So the objective there is identifying who am I talking to, product managers. What's that subject and central theme? Well, it's customer research using ethnography. And then what do I really want them to walk away with? I want them to know the five simple steps for doing that effectively. That brings us to R, the first R, which is rationale. These are the points of the objective, so those five simple steps, right? And you would say the first step is, right, and talk through your five steps. The second R is resources, and these are supporting elements that help to explain the rationale and really make them memorable, things that help the audience remember the key rationale points, the key aspects, those key simple steps in my example, such as, you know, a story that illustrates the first step is, and you're just trying to bring color and interest to each of the steps. And then the E in SCORE, so it's S-C-O-R-R-E, the E is evaluation. And this is just reflections on the effectiveness of your presentation and things that you would think about. Like next time I speak on ethnography, I want to include the pictures from our last user observation research, right? That sort of thing. Okay, that takes us through the year. You've heard some recurring themes in there. And if you were actually following me and listening to the podcast interviews, you heard recurring themes throughout the year also. And let me just highlight a few because I think these are important and they indicate some trends going on in the world of innovation and product management. Frequently, we had this notion of verifying before building, that we want to build the products customers want, not the product that we want to actually build, right? So we want to provide them value before we actually get into building. The innovation culture came up repeatedly, how to foster innovation culture and then how to leverage it to make a more effective organization. This notion of creating an innovation group inside an organization and how to maybe use that to do things like foster the innovation culture. Design thinking and lean startup, either specifically by those names was a recurring theme, or the concepts underlied a lot of the other interviews. And I was really surprised how many times this issue of storytelling came up. You'll hear the phrase storytelling, that word, storytelling, throughout a number of interviews and how people talked about the importance of story and what they're doing to think about new products and using story with customers and using stories with stakeholders to get them on board with product development efforts. Okay, that's my review of highlights from 2015. Also, I would love for you to check out that product mastery roadmap I told you about at the beginning of this episode. It's a new project for me. Love to get your feedback on it. And that means I need to get it in people's hands too. It tells you how to progress from product manager to product master. It adds a lot of clarity around what I've been working on for the last several years. And this is really about creating products that customers want and love and increasing your influence at your organization. It is those steps from product manager to product master. You can get the roadmap at no cost at theeverydayinnovator.com. Please check it out. Remember, the show notes for this episode are at theeverydayinnovator.com/053. And I have an insightful guest for next week's episode, so don't miss it. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.